Zondervan presents Edge of Apocalypse, Book 1 in the End series by Tim LaHaye and Craig Parshall. Read by Stefan Rudnicki. Part 1. Under the Nuclear Shadow. Richard Garwin, a designer of the hydrogen bomb, was called by Nobel laureate Enrico Fermi the only true genius I had ever met. Testifying to Congress in March 2007, Mr. Garwin estimated a 20% per year probability of a nuclear explosion, with American cities and European cities included. My Harvard colleague Matthew Bunn created a model that estimates the probability of a terrorist nuclear attack over a 10-year period at 29%. Graham Allison, director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs, Kennedy School of Government, and former Assistant Secretary of Defense, Washington Times, April 23, 2008. Return to sender. Address unknown. No such number. No such zone. By Winfield Scott and Otis Blackwell, 1962. Blessed is he who reads, and those who hear the words of the prophecy, and heeds the things which are written in it, for the time is near. Revelation 1:3. Chapter 1. In the Not Too Distant Future. At 12,000 feet, alarm bells started going off all over the cockpit of the Navy EA-6B Prowler. At first, Captain Lauder thought they'd run into a flock of birds, but they were much too high up. "Captain," shouted his lead ECM officer, Lieutenant Emmett Wilson, "onboard computers have crashed." "Avionics?" "Screwed up, sir." "Navigation?" "Everything's bugging out, sir," said his navigation officer, Lieutenant Jim Stewart, a bespectacled electronics nerd from the Naval Communications School at Pensacola. "Were we hit?" "Not that I can see, sir." Captain Lauder glanced quickly at the jet engine to his left. No smoke, no oil. He glanced to his right. The other engine appeared equally sound. Everything seemed normal, but the instruments said otherwise. Pressure dropping. Fuel gauge empty. Altimeter and directional indicators completely out of whack. "I need answers, men." Though the crew was good at their jobs, they were young, and the person they usually looked to for answers was Captain Lauder. "That's an order." "Sir," said Lieutenant Wilson hesitantly, "all I can think of is that we were hit with some kind of massive electromagnetic charge, either internal or external, fried all our instruments, or the Koreans have some new kind of sophisticated jamming system. We're supposed to be doing the jamming, not them." The Prowler's chief mission was reconnaissance and radar suppression, its weapons sophisticated electronic jamming equipment, and a single HARM, high-speed anti-radiation missile, that could seek out and destroy enemy radar defenses all on its own. "What about sunspots, sir?" suggested Lieutenant Stewart. "More likely we ran into Santa Claus," growled Captain Lauder as he fought to maintain control of the stick and keep the aircraft steady. "But it's only September." He didn't need guesses now. He needed solutions, and fast. "HQ Foxfire, this is Looking Glass, over," he yelled into the radio. "HQ Foxfire, this is Looking Glass, do you read me, over?"
"We're 20 minutes early on our verbal, sir. They're not going to respond," said Lieutenant Stewart.
"Or else the radio's dead, too. Anything still work on this plane?" The youngest of the three ECMOs, Lieutenant Derek Milius, a pimply-faced 21-year-old from Lubbock, Texas, shyly pulled an iPod out of his shirt pocket. He plugged it into the aircraft's intercom. The twangy strains of Hank Williams Jr. filled the cockpit.
"A little inspiration, sir."
"HQ Foxfire, this is Looking Glass, over. HQ Foxfire, this is Looking Glass, do you read me, over?" The voice of Captain Lauder crackled over the speaker.
"Sample complete. Ready to continue?"